a workshop in to try to investigate one particular idea which had been central from many approaches to quantum gravity, which is how classical space-time may in fact emerge from a quantum theory of gravity. And the idea, which was Olaf's idea originally, was to get people together who had been thinking about this problem and had results about this problem from different fields, and put us together, or I shouldn't say us, because I'm not one of those people, I'm just a fan thinking about that, in a room to talk about what had been understood, what had been accomplished, and whether there were affinities between the different approaches, whether especially there were things that the different approaches could learn from each other. And it's remarkable that people have been thinking about how classical space-time may emerge from quantum theory along several lines, from string theory, from causal binomial triangulations, from loop quantum gravity and spin foam models, from other approaches to quantum gravity, and very remarkably, also people in condensed physics and quantum information theory and foundations of quantum mechanics have been thinking about this question as well. So the idea is to get together, to understand what each other can do. We hope that the atmosphere is fun and critical, both. That is, there's a lot to say, there's a lot of interesting results, and there are a lot of questions, please understand. So here's the idea. The idea is that today we have talks which introduce what's been done from some of the approaches, and so here are the talks today, and it's a very interesting group of people from different points of view, and we'll introduce them individually as we come to that. And then tomorrow and Saturday, we will devote ourselves to a critical discussion. We have a rough agenda, which has been distributed, but the idea is that the discussion will be informal. We will make an agenda of topics to discuss, go through the different approaches, discuss the pros and the cons, the questions we've always wanted to ask each other, how, you know, what do you mean by that, what does that result really signify? As well as hear from some people who are not speaking today, who have interesting things to say about this. So that's the idea. Let me just say, again, the idea is to learn from each other. This is very much of a permanent kind of experiment, to have people who have been thinking about things with different methodologies from different fields to communicate with each other. So the idea today is to learn from each other, and on the weekend to really get into the details and discuss. And we're very thankful for people who come from far away for this, as well as people come here. Yeah. And so let's get started. Olaf is chairing.
Right. That's not wasting any time. It's my pleasure to introduce Krishna Bolivar. And he's going to talk about the method space topology and universality class fun.
Okay, so good. Sounds like a repetition.
Now, is that a finish of the main
line? Oh, yeah.
Maybe a bigger one?
A bit.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that the momentum space topology has been introduced more than 20 years ago in the first work of that by Feuerbach and Nielsen, who described the topological invariant for neutrino, why neutrino is mass protected, why it is protected against mass. And he wrote the topological invariant, which is somewhat different from what I wrote, not so general, and I will discuss the more general way, which is not only applicable for neutrino, but also for different fermionic excitations in condensed matter and in standard model. So why the momentum space topology is important? So I will talk about the momentum space topology and these different topological variants, which we have the topology 3 plus 1 space, 2 plus 1 momentum space, 1 plus 1, and so on. So why it is important? There are two reasons why it is important. The first one, that we have two major scheme of quantum field theory. The first scheme is traditional. It can be called the ground unification scheme. Good. Ground unification scheme means that at high energy, let's say about 1 Kennedy scale, 10 to 19.
Can you see?
Yeah,
no, just in case you
want. Yes. No, because you can see from here. Right? Can you see?
Yeah.
So if you start from some Planck scale, then you have a huge amount of symmetry, and then when the symmetry, when the energy becomes lower and lower, then you find the sequence of symmetry break and phase transition, and the symmetry becomes smaller and smaller. Finally, for example, SL10 group, which probably lives here, is broken to the group of the standard model. Standard model group is broken to the further group of U1 electromagnetic interaction. And when you go to the power scales of physics, or condensed matter scales of physics, you find that what we have in our page, that all the symmetries are broken, including the Lorentz symmetry, is violated because the condensed matter has this preferable reference frame. But even at this stage, we have only the rotation in the liquid, say, is isotropic, and some approximate symmetries. The approximate symmetry can be expected, as you see, symmetry of rotation of spins. If spin orbital interaction is small enough, then these two symmetries of conventional rotation and spin rotation, they are decoupled, and you can consider separately. And also, you have a lot of approximate U1 symmetries, which are responsible for which comes from the conservation law for number of atoms. For example, number of helium 3 atoms and number of helium 4 atoms. Each of them has U1 symmetry, but the symmetry is approximate because of the possibility of conversion of one atom to another. So we have the symmetry, and even this highly reduced symmetry, which is not gauge now, it's global symmetries, is also broken when you go to the superfluid phases. And even the space rotation and spin space rotation symmetry are broken, U1 symmetry are broken. So finally, you, all the symmetry are broken at the lower energy corner, and this is the ground unification scheme. So the lower energy, the lower temperature, the smaller is the scheme. But there is another approach which was first suggested by Holmberg and Nielsen. We can call this anti-ground unification, which has just opposite tendency. That this, what happens in the Planck scale, this huge symmetry which you have in the Planck scale, actually is emergent symmetry. It emerges from something at very high energy, where there was no symmetry at all. And the symmetry, the lower the energy, the symmetry becomes better and better. And the region for that, there are several regions for that, but I don't really discuss. Actually, the momentum space topology shows how and why from practically no vacuum space, no symmetry, the emergent symmetry arises and it's better and better the lower the symmetry. This is an anti-gravitational scheme. scheme. And in this matter, the same anti-gravitational scheme can be phrased also in the one of the phrases of the fluid field of 3, where all the symmetries are completely disappeared. But when you go to lower and lower temperature, you will find that for some strange particular reason related to the fundamental space topology, actually the same fundamental space topology and the standard model, one of things when the temperature approached zero, one finds that the symmetry continuously, without any transitions, continuously enhanced, and this symmetry is very close to the symmetry of the standard model of gravitational scheme. So these are two schemes, anti-gravitation where the symmetry becomes better and better, and then gravitational scheme where the symmetry becomes lower and lower. And the role of the momentum space topology is just to show how this anti-gravitation scheme fits. So you see, there are two different schemes. In gravitational scheme, it is a symmetry breaking, which is the most important phenomenon. And the topology of the topological defects are described by this broken symmetry. So topology follows from symmetry. Here, in anti-gravitational scheme, here the topology. And from this topology, Zwolle and Jacona, you have gradually all the symmetry. You obtain current fermions, Lorentz invariants, gauge fields, even gravity field. So all gradually emerge, and the symmetry in this corner emerge from topology. So instead of the topology for symmetry, we have the symmetry from topology and anti-gravitations. Okay, the next important issue why the momentum space topology is necessary is the observation that we live in extremely low temperature at the moment. So all the energies which are achievable today, they are, for example, electrolytic energy. It's it is extremely small compared to the characteristic energy of our vacuum, the Planck scale. So what does it mean? That if our say fermions are mass, then their mass must be of the order of Planck energy scale. And at the temperature, which is of the order of 10 to minus 17 of this, the activation energy, factor is so extremely small that practically there is no life in our universe. I mean, no no particles, no fermions, because all the fermions are frozen out. That's why what we need for the life in our universe to be filled with matter, it's necessary that we must have the gapless or massless fermionic particles. But this masslessness must be protected with a huge accuracy because of this huge hierarchy of energy scales. So the, why the the mass of the, say, quark or electron, why is not the Planck mass? What is the reason for that? The reason for that is that the mass is protected, sorry, not the mass, but the absence of the mass is protected by the topology. That's why we need the law of line excitations, and this law of line excitations, they live they live as close to the Fermi surface, which I will describe, or near the Fermi point, which are the topological objects in momental space. These are first the examples, and then I will discuss in more detail. So the physics of low temperature is determined by low line excitations. And the low line excitations, they can live either near the Fermi surface or near the Fermi point. The next slide will be about the Fermi surface, and I will show to you that the Fermi surface just represents the vortex in momentum space. It has all the same properties, the vortex in momentum space or string in momentum space. And the topology prevents the strings, the string from collapsing. And that is why the excitations which live close to the string, they are massless. So the reason for that is the topology of Fermi surface in monumental space. On the other hand, the Fermi point, it's the object in monumental space which looks like Hitchcock. The Hitchcock has its own topological invariant, which prohibits this defective monumental space to disappear. And this is the reason why current fermions are gapless. They are protected by this topological invariant. Okay, let's start with the topological stability of the Fermi surface. And the main question is to demonstrate that Landau was right when he discussed the Fermi liquid in terms of the Fermi surface. Because Fermi surface actually emerges in the gas of particles. Let's suppose that we have a gas of particles with a chemical potential which is positive. It can be atoms of helium 3, it can be electrons. But let's forget about interaction. So no interaction is involved. What we can see from this energy spectrum? It's non-relativistic from this matter, particles are non-relativistic. P squared minus mu. It's the energy coming from the chemical potential. If this energy is negative, then, because these are fermions, the space with negative energy must be occupied. So we have the Fermi surface of the radius Pf squared equal to 2 mass multiplied by chemical potential. This state are occupied. The states with energy positive, where P is larger than Fermi momentum, you will find that the energy is positive, and that's why at zero temperature the space must be empty. That's why we have well-defined surface, which is called Fermi surface. And then one might ask, okay, we can have something like domain wall. And domain wall probably is topologically stable. It's not so, because and it's very easy to show that it is not so, because let's now introduce interaction. And what happens when you introduce interactions, then some particles from the Fermi C, from the with negative energy, they will push out to the positive energy level because of the interaction. So the domain wall picture is not good for the description of Fermi surface, why the Fermi surface survives under interaction. The reason why it survives, because it is vortex. To see that it is a vortex, let's introduce a green function. The propagator in momentum space on the imaginary frequency axis. So we are on slightly in the Euclidean space, momentum space. And let's look at now at this Green's function. Well, this Green function has singularity. So what we are looking for is the singularity of the Green function. We will be Fermi surface, for point, Galois, or whatever. It is singular, and the Green function has no inverse. The Green function is not determined, but only P is 0, and P equal to P. There is no other way. When this is 0, this is 0, G is not determined. When it happens, let's draw, instead of four-dimensional picture, I suppress, say, PZ, then we have omega, PX, and PY. So PX squared plus PY squared must be Fermi momentum, and omega must be 0. So the singularity of the Green function leaves on the circle. What is great in this circle? Let's go around the element of the line, and you will find that the phase of the Green function changes by 2 pi. So this is a really vortex in momentum space. And this is the reason you have the topological Wendling number, which cannot be continuously changed from, say, from Wendling number 1 to Wendling number 0. And that's why whatever interaction you introduce perturbatively, not perturbative interaction, you will get something different. But if you make it's a topology, so you consider the what happens under small perturbations. Do the small perturbations change or change not the system? It doesn't change because of the topological model. And this is the reason why the Landau-Fermi liquid works. Landau-Fermi liquid means that Landau-Fermi liquid can be described in terms of the Fermi gas in terms of the Fermi surface. And this is really so, interaction does not violate, does not destroy the Fermi surface. Here you have the green function which has singularity. Close to the singularity, the fermions will be massless, and their energy will be more or less like the one. So it's a generic situation that the Fermi surface produces the gapless fermions which lives close to the Fermi surface. This is
do you need to protect the momentum of the Fermi point? So to be consistent with to explain the electron in the universe.
Yes.
I think the argument you explained is protect the masslessness of the Fermi point.
It's not Fermi point, it's Fermi surface.
Okay.
It's the Fermi point you believe.
Yeah, but so you know, for the Fermi surface, the position of Fermi surface is not protected. It's kind of.
No, the position of the surface is not protected. But yeah. I don't know. Yeah. It's the next slide.
But the question is that to make connection to explain elementary particles, whether one also need to explain to protect the position of Fermi surface, or position of Fermi point.
This will be discussed a little bit later. Okay, so what was the difference actually? There is no difference between the topology of the vortex in a real space, where, say, the order parameter, I say the modulus of the phase changes by 2π around the line. Here you have, instead of z, y, x, you have omega, p, y, and p, x, and we also have the vortex. But now it's a momentum space. So there is no difference. And if you introduce the PZ coordinates, the vortex becomes a vortex shape, but the topological value doesn't change. Now about the protection. Of course, this, what you say, describes the quantum phase transition. This changes the chemical potential. We start from the positive chemical potential, and chemical potential determines the position of the Fermi surface. P of square divided by n is chemical potential. Now we decrease the chemical potential, then we see that the vortex in the momentum space becomes smaller and smaller. Finally, when mu becomes zero, it shrinks. Then when mu becomes negative, the state becomes completely fully gapped. So there is no gapless states with less than zero. So we have the quantum phase transition. You see that there is no change of the symmetry along this path. So the transition occurs only in zero direction. When you go around this, there is no symmetry. The change only is a continuous change of the topology across this point. The vortex shrinks. Here, why it is also the quantum phase transition? Because all the thermodynamic quantities, when you consider the asymptotic behavior when temperature goes to zero, you will find that this behavior is different. Here, for example, heat capacity is proportional to temperature. Here, the heat capacity is activation pressure. It's explored by the motif. These two asymptotes cannot be smoothly joined throughout this process. So it's really different asymptotes from the phase transition. So what was the quantum phase transition? You can see that the momentum space topology induces some kind of quantum phase transitions. where the phase transition occurs when we change some parameter, but the temperature is not zero, and there is no symmetry change along this path, but the transition occurs only at zero temperature. This is one of the transitions, there can be Lipschitz transition, Plato transition, I will discuss it a little bit later. Of course, it can be it's not the first order, it's not the second order transition, otherwise there will be the second order transition line. But it can be the first order transition line, because you know that in the first order transition line, if there is no symmetry change, there can be an endpoint here, and there is another endpoint at the zero temperature. Okay, this is an example of Lipschitz transition as a recollection of vortex lines. So you have this vortex line, you have this vortex line, so you change the period of potential at some moment they touch each other and then they connect. So this is a typical Lipschitz transition, but you see the green function is not actually the green function can be very complicated, it can be the matrix. And for the if the green function is a matrix, then topological invariant is given by, just a moment, do I have this, probably not, I don't have this invariant here. So the topological invariant can be written as a trace. So the topological invariant M1 is 1 divided by 2 pi I. The green function now is some matrix because you have spin indices, you have indices of Fermion spaces, you have web indices of the crystal, and along this line, G minus 1. This integral works for any matrix, and when we go around this vortex, you will find that this topological invariant, the integral is just along the loop around this vortex, and you will find that it's integer, it cannot change continuously. Okay, now let's go to the point particles. No, sorry, not the point particles, to the particles for the vacuum which have excitation which are described by point in momentum space, not the surface in momentum space. So before we consider the two-dimensional surface in three-dimensional momentum space. Now we have point. The typical example is say right-handed electron or right-handed neutrino, whatever. Right-handed one. It's Hamiltonian is sigma dot p, where sigma is Pauli matrix. Now let's look at the distribution of the spin. So spin for massless current particle must be directed along the momentum. In order to have a positive energy, the positive energy particle must have spin along the momentum. That's why at each momentum p, the spin is just along the direction of p. So let's draw this. Let's take some p along, say, px axis, and spin must be along this direction. If it is minus px, it is along this direction. If it is along this here, the spin is here. So this arrow shows the direction of spin, and you can see that it follows the hedgehog. The hedgehog has stable topological invariant by 2 homotopic group symmetry. And this means that it cannot be destroyed continuously. So if you introduce null interaction and you have only one species of the Fermion, you never destroy the singularity in the green function, and it means that you always have the massless Fermion. So the Goethe's Fermion is topologically stable and is protected from the mass just because of the topological invariant. And it doesn't matter that here we consider a relativistic system, but in non-relativistic we have actually the same. Let's look, for example, at this Hamiltonian, which describes the quasi-particles so-called Carroll superconductor. Or superfluid Hilbert 3a. So what we have here? It's a superconductor, that's why we have a matrix in in superconductor, there is a matrix element which couples particle and a flow of this negative energy. It's particle, this is matrix element, so there is a mixing between particles and flows. That's why it is described by two-weighted matrix. And this two-weighted matrix can be written in terms of the in current superconductor. It's a p-wave superconductor, that's why the matrix element is proportional to the volume. So we can write this in terms of the Pauli matrix times vector g as a function of p. So it is g3 minus g3, g1 is tau 1 matrix, g2 minus g2 is tau 2 matrix. And we can write this topological invariant now, which is the making of the surface around the, so you have some point, for example, this is a point where the for current particles the energy is zero. You take the surface, and this is the integral over this surface. And this is a mapping of this surface to the unit to the unit sphere of the unit vector g. G with the hat is g divided by the modulus of g. And you will find that in this region, at this point, you have the topological invariant unity. It means that close to this point, the kernel right-handed particle. Sorry, minus one. Current left-handed particle leaves around this point in momentum space. The topological invariant is n3 equal plus 1, which corresponds to H4 is outer direction of the how is it called? Eagles. What is the H4 is?
Quills.
Okay. In general, the topological invariant can be written in terms of the Green function, which already doesn't depend on what kind of the Hamiltonian, because Hamiltonian, when you have a direction system, the Hamiltonian is not a proper quantity as a Green function, is only quantity which can be written. And M3 is a now you have the point in four-dimensional space, you embrace this by three-dimensional surface, and then you calculate what is the topological invariant, and you will find that it is unity for the H4 is first rule. Okay. Yes. Okay. What really is
that?
Can you write?
Doesn't I'm not going to get it wrong.
Will this?
Yeah. I just want to say
error.
Error. Yes. Yes, okay, so what is great at this point? This is very important. When you go, so look at this Hamiltonian. Where the energy goes to zero? It goes to zero when Px equals to zero, Py equals to zero, right? And then Pz square equals to Ferromagnetic square. So Pz equals to Ferromagnetic. So in this three-dimensional picture, it is, there are two points. Where P along Z and P opposite to Z. So there are two points. And it's a non-relativistic Hamiltonian, and when you enter this interaction, something is more complicated. But when you go closer and closer to this point, then you will find that the symmetry emerges. And the Hamiltonian which you obtain close to this point will be exactly the same as for the current particle in relativistic theory. So if you make the square of this, just for simplicity, you will find that this massless fermion, it can be described by the following equations. KU and WU, there are some kind of effective gauge field, and GU is the effective gravitational field. Okay, wait a minute. I was not here. Okay, so wait, I didn't use the transparency. So what actually happens at this, this point? So we have this point in momentum space. Say at p equals 0. It doesn't matter, can be some as p, we can shift. Then you can ask the following question. What are the collective modes of the vacuum which has such a Fermi point? So you introduce all the possible perturbations of the vacuum. And then you will find that under this perturbation, the hedgehog, sorry, this Fermi point cannot disappear because it has topological invariant. So what can happen with this Fermi point? It can only shift, for example, from this position to the next position, it means that P transforms to P minus some P naught. And this P naught is a collective mode, because it's one of the collective modes of the one. So, but the shift of the position in momentum plays the role of the gauge shift. And that's why this P naught plays exactly the same role as a gauge field interacting with the current field. But moreover, this is the negative gauge field. And if you write the Lagrangian for this gauge field, you will find that in the logarithmic approximation, it's exactly f mu nu, it's exactly g mu nu, this logarithm, which is running up. So you obtain the Lagrangian for the effective collective mode, which role is just to shift of the position. Then another possibility is that instead of to have so close to this point, you have p squared equal to p squared. But there are some collective rules which change the coefficient in front of P in different direction differently. It means that this mode leads to, say, a change like G mu, P mu, P mu. And that's why this G mu, this collective rule, plays exactly the same role as the metric field. So the metric field also necessarily emerges in the system where the vacuum has a Fermi point. So Fermi point gives rise to the first gives rise to the current fermions, then gives rise to the gauge field of gravity. So all the ingredients of that model of gravity, they actually emerge in this system. And they emerge together with the Lorentz invariant, because all of this point you see that you have perfect Lorentz invariant. It has also the gauge invariant, because in the logarithmic approximation, the Lagrangian for the collective mode f mu has the same Lorentz invariance. The only problem was with the gravity, because the general is not so easy to obtain the general convex at this point. Because there are many reasons for that. But in principle, it is clear how to obtain the general covariance too.
Excuse me. So, for this emergence of gauge field, my understanding is the helium 3 is kind of the symmetry breaking of this other parameter.
It's not important. The symmetry breaking here is not important. It's important what at what topology you come. Okay. So you see, the theory of everything for helium 3 isn't just very simple. It's a pair-like interaction of atoms. And this is the background of our lecture. And when you go to lower and lower temperature, low energy, you will find that it's actually for ground dependent, that the only role of the microscopic physics, the only role of this potential, is to choose between different classes of the vacuum. So if you manage to go to the phase A, you obtain this kind of fermions and collecting modes which play the role of the gravity and so on.
So how many low-lying collecting modes do you have in phase A? Just collecting modes, not fermions.
Collecting modes, you have really new collecting modes. You have a mu, you have SU2 gauge mode. So it's.
It matters with the heat. What is the coefficient? You know, for the Schrödinger integral fluid, it matters with heat.
No, so the specific heat is determined mainly by fermion.
Suppose you ignore the fermion.
No, how you can do it?
You try to identify whether the.
You have several contributions. There are dominating contributions from fake fermions, but you have also the contributions from this field.
Could you explain again how these non-linear gauge fields can be written? How these gauge fields can be written in terms of the fermion data of the fermion?
I would suggest, since we're close to the close, that maybe it's technical.
No, maybe we have a lot of time. I think we're going to see 7, no, it's not even 7, I have only 13 transparencies. Maybe later I will explain more about that.
Because we have on the weekend, we have a lot of time to do that.
Yes, I would like to say a little how much I have 5 minutes. Yes. I don't have possibility to discuss one topology yet because the topological invariant is very interesting. But maybe I will talk about later. But now you can see that if you look at the standard model, then you will find that above the electric transition, but much below the quantum energy scale, so it's a low temperature limit. Extremely we have for one generation a left quark, which I described by this topological invariance, which means that the Hedgehog, I mean spines as spins, so the role of spins played by spines. And the spines are inward for the left hand fermion. For the right hand fermion, they are described by the Hedgehog with the spines outward. And the topological variant is given by this. So the standard model actually belongs to the marginal type of the Fermi limit, because as you asked, the position of the Fermi point, all the Fermi points, all 8 left-handed Fermi points, and right-handed and right-handed Fermi points, they are at the same point p equals 0. It means that the total topological charge of the Fermi point is 0. It means that this is marginal. And marginal means that it's very easy to destroy by any perturbation. Not exactly any, but which violates some symmetry. You can destroy this Fermi point. That's why I can say immediately that there are two possible scenarios of how to how the this marginal Fermi points behaves if we introduce some symmetry breaking interaction. For example, what we have now for charge electron and for quarks, we have Higgs mechanism. Higgs mechanism means that SU2 cross U1 symmetry is broken, but this is just SU2 cross U1 symmetry, which allowed this marginal Fermi point to exist because this is a symmetry between different types of fermions, which doesn't allow to destroy this Fermi point despite that the total charge of the Fermi point is 0. There is also CPT symmetry, which also plays the same role. But if you destroy the SU2 cross U1 symmetry, we will obtain the two fermions. Let's consider the pair of fermions, just one positive and one negative. So the total charge is 0. Then you obtain the Dirac fermion. The director is a massive failure. But if you destroy, say, CPT invariants, you can find another scenario, which is very different. The failure point with plus one and minus one, they will split in momentum space. This is violation of Lorentz invariance because of the directions. And if you have, say, both violations, Higgs mechanism and CPT violation, then you can find the possible, one of the possible phase transitions, quantum phase transition. Probably for neutrino sector, nobody knows what happens actually in the neutrino sector. Is it this type of behavior or the CPT violation? It's the CPT violation still does not rolled out by the experiment. And you can tell the quantum phase transition when you change the parameter of the system, you have two failure points, then these failure points become closer and closer, they form the marginal failure points, then these marginal failure points, since it has topologically trivial invariant, it becomes produces a gap. So I have no time, and that's why I go to conclusion. Okay. So the moment of space topology determines many things. It determines the universality classes of quantum vacuum. So does quantum vacuum has Fermi point, or it has Fermi surface, or it has Fermi lines? By the way, Fermi lines are very interesting because, as Professor Ferrara found that the Fermi lines, they obey very interesting property, that they are Z2 lines, means that 1 plus 1 equals to 0 instead of 2. So it means that two Fermi lines, even on the same structure, when they collapse, they gives 0. Then also they give the effective field theory in this quantum vacuum. For example, in case of Fermi surface, the effective field theory is on Dahl theory. In case of the Fermi point, it is a theory of the relativistic quantum fields described fermions and Cage fields. Then I didn't show to you the quantization of all the spin field conductivity and topological short sinus dome. No, maybe I'll just show you one example. The last equation, the shear sinus dome can be written in terms of the real space invariant times momentum space invariant. So this is general situation. So the real space invariant in terms of the Gauge field, and this Gauge field can be different at A and F, and this factor is integer. And it is determined by the momentum space topology, and when you change the parameter of the system, this topological change changes the step once more. Okay. Then it determines the quantum statistics of the topological object, spectrum of the edge states. If, for example, we live on the brain, then the topology of the edge state of the brain is determined by the topological invariant of the bulk. It's also an interesting situation. And also the current anomaly, what is the name, is completely determined by the momentum space topology. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Then very short question. So the setup of this conference is such that we really have a lot of time for you. So if there are long questions, please note them down and we will have time to address them for the weekend. Are there any short questions? Because we are already a bit over time. Yes, that's the point. Yeah, that's what I mean by short. Right.
Maybe we just go on.
Yeah, maybe we just go on. Okay. Thanks.